Yes, guys, what's good? You're tuned into Mango Masala, Pi Radio South Asian show. My name's Gerns. I'm here with Halima and Simran.
Yeah.
Yo, yo.
And it's sort of bittersweet because it was meant to be all three of us here in the studio.
Oh, no.
But then someone had other plans.
And I wasn't that someone.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Do you want to disclose the death in the family, Simran?
She's an all black, by the way, guys.
Yeah, I'm in mourning. A very close family member of Mango Masala suffered a tragic loss. Jake, guys, my car, my Polo, been with me for the last 5 years. Literally, the key reason why I've been able to be on this show.
Yeah.
Mm, from the very beginning.
That car, me and the M62, man.
Oh.
It's been a long day.
I have really only just stopped crying. You know, like when not today, but like the last like couple days. Yeah. You know when an actual human person dies, and you wake up in the morning, and for like a minute, everything feels like it's normal life, and then it hits you like a truck. I've been having that with the car.
Oh no! what's your plan then? Like, are you getting
a new car? Yeah. Obviously, I won't talk too much about what happened to it, but the car got written off and no one was hurt is the bottom line, is the main thing. But
and it wasn't Simran's fault.
Simran,
it was not my fault. My insurance is not being affected because I wasn't even in the car. Mm. But yeah, now we're on the hunt for a new car, guys. But I'm sad because I know it's just a car, but if anyone knows me, I love that car.
You love that
me
car.
And that car were best buds.
Yeah.
And it took me from A to B. It, literally, that car, the amount of mileage that car did up the M1, the M40, from Slough to Liverpool to Manchester, Nottingham, Barnsley.
Do you know how many miles it had on it?
A lot.
Yeah.
More than it should have.
Surely more than 100,000, at least. Yeah.
Oh, no. Because really? I only had it for 4.5 years.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but so still, the amount that you were driving, like up and down the distance.
It did have a lot.
Yeah. Sigh. Yeah.
I went to Wales once. I know
exactly how you feel. Like, it was my fault with my car. I did write my car off nearly 10 years ago. But even then, I'd only had that car for 2 years. And even that, the amount of memories that there were associated with it, like driving all my friends around, like all like the place we've been, when me and Bianca first started dating, like it was sad. But yeah.
I know. Everyone's and now alive. I've been looking at cars, and the first place I went to was another Volkswagen garage, like to find another Jake.
But just get the same one.
No, it feels wrong.
Really? Like, is that when people like have a pet that dies and they get a new pet, but like you have to find that balance between not replacing them but also
I can't. Jake will never be replaced.
Special place in your heart.
I suppose it is a bit different in terms of when you get another pet that is purely a choice, whereas a car in Simran's world is a bit of a necessity in terms of it does need to happen, basically. But so take your time with it. Don't rush into anything.
If you're listening at home, take a 1 minute silence.
Support line available for anyone who's going for a similar.
If you've been affected by issues mentioned in this program, reach out to Simran. We can grieve together.
You know what's mad though? I literally a clip's going viral at the moment across like Asian social media of in Slough again, and it's someone literally ramming a car in purpose into someone's house and then running away. And I was tempted to send it to you, like Simran, like this isn't related to what's happening with you again. But
Slough is a GTA server sometimes, man.
Mm-hmm.
There's just things happening all over the place.
So, but yeah, what did you get to at least say bye to Jake before he got towed?
I watched it get towed, and the wheel fell off as they were dragging it up the ramp of the thing. Oh my god!
One final moment of just humiliation.
And the person who came, the guy that works with the tow truck, the person that came, he was like a proper like Essex, like East London, like geezer. Really wasn't helping the situation. Like, oh, sorry for your car. And I was like,
you know what? People who work in cars are actually quite insensitive. Like, you know, whenever I go like to take my car for a service or whatever, I'm always just a bit taken aback by like, why are they not being nice to me? Like, I'm being all cheery, and they all just act like they hate their job. Why are you doing it then?
What mechanics?
You know, when they're nice, when you're buying a car. They literally could not do more for you.
Oh, the sales
people. When they're trying to sell you a car. Yeah, man. Cause now I'm just getting like pestered by all the people that I've like put my name down for new cars and stuff, and they literally will not stop.
Oh, that's such a headache. You know what's annoying? It's like, and this is, the older I get, this is how I respond to tragedy. It's like, on the one hand, like, it's sad because you've lost your car. The thing that would annoy me the most is like, it's just annoying. The faff. Admin, the
It's faff, another admin,
the
yeah.
The whole, oh my God. The first thing, that any time like tragedy strikes, before I feel sad, before I feel hurt, before I'm aggrieved, the first thing is always paperwork. Like, I CBA. Like, I just...
The paperwork.
I didn't need this, honestly.
I know. But you know, like, given the... I listened to the voice note that said, like, given the circumstances of it, it has been a lot easier than it would have
yeah,
been.
Yeah, true, because... The person, like, who was involved did come forward in the end, didn't they?
Yeah. We had a person. Initially, we didn't. Now we do. So that made everything a lot easier. But it's still not over. There's still so much to do on top of looking for a new car.
That's it. Because it's not a small thing. Buying a new car is not a small thing. Like, that's a big... Like, it's a big task. And it takes so much time. And, like, money... Oh, well, I guess you got the payout. But still, like...
Yeah. Well, aside from that tragic event, how has everyone else's week been?
Well, I want to talk about something about cars as well, please.
Okay,
go on. This morning, guys, I woke up and I was like, you know, me and my sister, every day for the past week, she comes into my room first thing after school and she's like, the whiff of summer in the air. Like, obviously, I have spoken extensively about how much I suffer with, like, SAD and how much I struggle. It's an existential struggle against like winter, and we seem to be at the back end of it now. This past week we've had really nice weather. It's kind of like very springy, you know, blue skies, bit of sun in there.
Don't jinx it.
Have you seen the weather forecast?
It's have you seen the weather?
Yeah, apparently it's going down after next week anyway. But right now I just checked and it's like apparently we've hit highs of 18 degrees today. Then I got
17 degrees on this computer.
Yes, like that. I got in my car and like I actually needed to put the AC on. I didn't because I like wanted to sit in the heat, but like I needed to put the AC on. So I'm really happy today. Tell me why. I get out, I get to my car, and there's a PCN, a parking notice. And no, this is not the end of the story, because I'm used to getting parking notices. To be honest, I do sometimes just park sloppily, knowing that I'm going to have to pay that, but I just rather find a parking space. However, this is on my road. We don't have any parking restrictions. I parked outside my house where I have been parking for the past like 4 or 5 years. And I opened the PCN thinking I'm appealing this. This is nonsense. And it's not even a PCN. It's a parking like in whatever ticket officer. And he's written on the PCN, selfish parking in capital letters. I was fuming, as in like I had to drive in silence. I was that angry.
As in,
I thought,
you've just driven right now. This is just happening.
Just right now, like literally 20, 30 minutes ago.
Do you know?
Selfish parking, the same spot that I've been parked for the past four.
Do you know why it's being
basically, selfish? I tell you why. And it's actually, it's Islamophobic because, yeah. So basically.
I think I've seen how she parks though. I think I've seen her where you park your car at home.
Let me tell you. But that's not a problem because everyone in my road parks like that. Yeah. Everyone parks like that. So basically, do you know the Chilo Mosque?
Right.
It's right opposite my house.
Right.
Last year, they went a massive renovation, as in like they have like increased the capacity of the mosque by threefold, right? So everyone in the area comes to that mosque. Oh, it gets a lot of footfall.
You said people aren't happy about that.
Have I told you that before? So people, and obviously people are coming to the masjid and they're parking on the surrounding roads. My road is one of the surrounding roads. And that means on like Friday prayers, it's like packed out. Obviously it's Ramadan, so a lot of people are going to the mosque every single day. Like it's, you know, it's been quite busy. And as a result of that, they've started to put like, not in my road, they put like parking cones basically. So that's not a parking restriction. It is for like a time period. They put parking cones out, they started putting ticket inspectors out, like they put police out, everything. Yeah, police. Like if you drive past that the mosque on a Friday Jummah prayer, there's literally like three police vans.
It's the fact as well that Friday prayer is like the most
peaceful
thing.
So people are literally going to pray, right? And there's other people on my road. So my area where I live is like historically a very white middle class suburban area. In the past couple of years there have been like more it's mostly South Asian people like coming in a little bit more, and I guess the mosque is a big factor that attracts people because Muslim people like to live near a mosque. And the neighbours, you know, the white non-Muslim neighbours have been like complaining. A few of them have put their house on sale. My dad asked one of them, oh, how come you're moving? And they went, oh, because of the mosque. Like, there's too many, like, we can't, it's too much of a nuisance for us. Can you imagine?
I also can't believe that she said it to his
face. They said it to his face. They said it to his face. They don't care. They don't care. So that's why they've been, there's been a heightened scrutiny on my road over parking. But it's like, that's my house. Like, if you're here every week, you'll see that my car is here, like all the time. And also, I'm not parked any differently to how anyone else is parked. I think that the people must be complaining, like, there's too many cars. But then also, like, that's just, guess what? That's just a freedom that people have.
So what is it in the way, say, if you didn't live there, what is it to do with the way that you park that's made them think that's selfish?
I don't, maybe because they think it's front of a driveway and they think that it's someone else's, because it's like we have like a drive, it's closed off, and I park in front of our drive, so, like blocking our drive. So but that's my drive.
You didn't get a fine though.
They just didn't get a fine. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You're so, I'm gonna leave a note back. I'm gonna leave a note back.
Where?
Just print out a picture of a middle.
No, wallahi, God is my witness. I'm leaving a note
print
back.
Print out a picture of a middle finger. Where? And just like,
I'm gonna put it in a plastic wallet and put it on my car, on my windscreen. No, wallahi, watch me if I don't. Watch me if I don't, because I don't know who this person thinks they are to try to intimidate me. Oh, my God.
Putting a note on your own car is so funny.
Yes, I'm literally going to say, do not ever in your life ever leave me a note. It's not illegal. I don't care about what your opinion is. I was fuming.
It's giving me semi-flashbacks to the time I got pulled over by the police as I was parking outside my own house.
It's like, what the hell?
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. Honestly, jobless people, selfish parking. Oh my God, get a real job.
No, it is true as well. Like, there are so many more better things that those people could be doing. Why are they being, like, deployed to Tingle to go and, like...
harass Muslim people going for Friday prayers. Get a
during
grip.
During Ramadan as well.
Get like, a grip. Oh, my God.
Yeah. I mean, on that note, Ramadan Mubarak to everyone. Guys. Yeah, I haven't said it yet.
Astaghfirullah. Yeah. I hope that my anger's not breaking my fast.
I mean, it's valid. You need to... You know what? You need to work through it and then be like...
Yeah, I know. Honestly, I was writing out the letter in my head on my drive here. That's how angry I was. I was like, I want to say this. And if I dare catch them, oh my God.
I got a note on my windscreen once. Someone said that that I parked like a twat.
What?
Right, well, apologies. Simran, you keep making a
pattern. That's not a swear word.
I'm pretty sure it borders the line, so apologies.
Nah, they say it on like EastEnders. That's pre-watershed vocabulary.
Right, well, I'm saying apologies to anyone that is
offended.
Okay,
they said I part like a TWAT.
You know what's funny is how in America they call it twat.
Is it?
You said it.
I know, I said twat. I didn't say that. that's a loophole.
God, Ofcom and the like pedantics. Gosh.
But anyway, yeah. I mean, were you simmering or no?
No.
No.
I was on a normal curb.
This is what I mean. Like, I was parked outside of my house in the exact same manner that everybody else on the road is parked.
I think just sometimes people who have something up their rear end sometimes like fail to realize that just because someone's parked somewhere, there's context and things might have happened afterwards. Because
right.
I have had it before that people have left notes and I'm literally like, yeah, fair enough, now it looks like that, but that's because of how other people have parked around me. Mm. That's nothing to do with me. Like,
Maybe
think like, okay, this person didn't decide to do this, I don't know.
No, my thing is like, and also, I think I know what it is. They've probably assumed that this is like a non-Muslim household and like we are part of the people that are complaining and that are grieved by the influx of Muslim people.
It's too nice of a house to and possibly be inhabited,
you know what I mean?
By Muslims.
Like they've like seen the car outside of the driveway and just assumed that I'm the one of the Muslims like invading someone else's street. But and even if that was the case, it's like you don't actually own that street. Like as long as it's not illegal, I don't care about what your opinion is, whether you think I'm being selfish or not. You're not employed to do that.
It is kind of just like, what's the point?
It's not your dad's road that you get to dictate to people and label people's like parking. Buy the road. If you're that pressed about it, buy the road and then you can tell me where I can and can't park. Buy that land.
Yeah, but also probably we shouldn't probably be encouraging probably white people to buy land.
More land, yes, I guess.
Like,
so.
That's still our the like.
But that's the only situation where you can tell me. You know what I mean? Unless it's illegal and you own the land.
Yeah, no, there's no reason. Yeah.
Oh, it really, really wound me up.
Well, hopefully this has acted as a bit of a place for you to vent and get it off your chest.
Yes. Yeah. Oh my God, speaking of venting and getting things off my chest, back to my car.
What's happened now?
No, because obviously I've been now looking for cars and like, I've just got so much to say about the situation. I just love retelling the full story to people because I'm just so enraged and so like shocked by the loss of my car. And obviously, you know how I said like the salespeople are really nice and they're always trying to make a sale. I've trapped them into being my therapist. So I'm like, if you want to be nice, like, listen to me yap about how much I love that car and how devastated I am by this whole thing. So now I went on a test drive and I was literally like, used the whole test drive to be like, and then we went to Liverpool and Manchester and then I went to Nottingham for university and I love that car, man. And I took it all over the UK and now it's gone.
Hopefully they just give you like a discounted price to get rid of you.
Wonderful.
That would be amazing. That's a good tactic.
That's a win-win for me.
It's a win-win.
I got things off my chest and I got a discount.
Yeah,
that would be amazing. Fair.
Well, thankfully, touch wood, I haven't had any car drama. I am taking it in for a service on Monday, so we'll see whether there's anything negative touch that comes from that. I have been a bit ill the past week, so that's been annoying. I feel like I'm still sniffly, so apologies to anyone that's hearing me like sniffling in the back.
Everyone is ill at the moment. Yeah. Like everyone.
Let me not jinx anything.
It's just so annoying because, you know, I came back last time we recorded, it was last Tuesday, and I just came back from India, and I was giving it all a big talk about, yeah, I've come back, and like, I'm not ill.
Didn't get
and,
deli
like,
belly.
Yeah, I didn't have that. And literally the next day I started feeling bad, and I was just like, ugh.
Oh, it's been a while then.
No, I was properly ill for like a week and a half. It was weird. Gosh. Like, I don't know.
It usually doesn't last that long, like the flu.
It doesn't. And also, I usually don't get ill that much. So it was quite weird. And also, it was really annoying because it was around my uncle's birthday as well.
It
so
might it have been like, because you've had like back-to-back two big trips. And you know when people say like in the time, like adrenaline keeps you going or whatever. And then afterwards, then like your body stops for a second. And that's when all like the stress and like the blah, 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 blah would like get to you. Yeah. It might have been that. It might have weakened your immune system.
I don't want to trigger you by saying this, but I am hopefully done with traveling. For now.
I am triggered because you know what, I've just been thinking like, obviously this week has been fine because like the weather's been okay and like it's Ramadan, so I'm literally just doing nothing but praying at the minute, but obviously I'm still like not happy to be here. And I was just thinking like it's been 2 months now since like my last trip, and this is around the time that like you know every month or other month like it's around this gap that I would now go away. And I can't afford to anymore. Like, at this time, I just can't afford to leave. Well, how miserable. How abysmal.
Well, hopefully it'll make you appreciate the things more.
Well, I'm just going to have to, like, yeah. Well, I mean, I hope this situation doesn't last long, but...
Yeah. Another thing I did this week, last night, actually, I watched the new Simone Ashley film, Picture This. You know, the one that we talked about?
Oh, right. Yeah. Is it worth it? I want to watch it because it's her and I really love her, but I don't want to watch it because I can't be bothered for another piece of film or show where it's a brown woman lead and then a white man.
This is exactly what I was saying to Mianke yesterday.
Can't be bothered for
and
that.
This is with I'm obviously the product of a mixed race relationship, brown and white as well. And even I'm saying I'm actually fed up of like seeing like
it's white, not there's not like, a problem with it. It's just it's too overrepresented.
Wait, what is this? So what program is this?
Simone Ashley, Picture This.
It's
a new film released on Amazon, I think, on Thursday. It's like rom-com.
Simone Ashley, the really pretty one from Bridgerton.
Yeah, okay.
She was doing bits for South Asian Tamil representation, everything. Amazing. Like, I love her in Bridgerton, Sex Education, everything. But
and it's
that was
so cliche.
It was one of the things with that. I was just like, and also having watched the whole film, when it finished, I was like, he could have very easily have just been a brown person, guy. Or just non-white.
No, like, but the thing is that I've not watched the film, but I've watched the trailer because, again, I love Simone Ashley and like I had the full intention to like support her, right? And I watched the trailer, and even from the trailer, it's this idea of like her mum's trying to set her up on like arranged marriage kind of situation.
Yeah.
And in the trailer, it shows her going on a date with like some Indian or like South Asian guys, and it's just kind of rolling her eyes like, oh, don't like this, don't like them. Yeah. And then in the end, you know, the heartthrob is like, And then in the end, the heartthrob is like the white guy.
Exactly.
You know? And I'm like, it's
the one that's been there all along.
Yeah, and like, it's like, it's so done. It's so tired. Like Carlos said, there's nothing wrong with interracial couples or even having them in media, but it's at a point where it's like, it's so overrepresented.
Yeah.
And like the other side of it, where it's like brown and brown couples or even like brown and black couples, they're not shown at all.
Yeah. And this is what I meant. Like at the end of it, I was like, you know what? It actually probably would have made more sense plot wise.
Yeah.
If like the main lead male interest had been non-white. But aside from that as well, it kind of, I mean, in a similar area actually, there were a couple of scenes in it which did kind of just feel a bit like it was kind of taking the mickey out of South Asian culture a bit.
Well, like so overly cliche.
Yeah, like that. Well, or even to the point that it's quite incredulous. Like, because there was one point, there was one scene that actually I saw on social media before I watched it. And then when I watched it properly, I was like, yeah, people are right, actually. Mm. And it's basically, the storyline revolves around Simone Ashley's sister is getting married. She's the elder sister.
Yeah,
funny,
like,
funny that.
Bridget, oh, ha, 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 ha.
But yeah, she's the eldest sister. So obviously, there's the pressure to for her to do that, to settle down. But she's like a creative. She's in loving life. And there's one point where they go to like a pre-wedding ceremony with the pundit, the Hindu priest there. And he's it's at this point that he kind of says, he gives some kind of astrological thing where he's like, oh, like within the next 5 dates, you're going to find the one kind of thing. But it goes beyond that to the point that some bits of it are actually quite uncomfortable because it is kind of just almost mimicking,
yeah,
like,
how
it is.
Yeah, no, I get what you mean. It's like a very over-exaggerated caricature of kind of, like, Hindu culture and the Hindu faith. And
yeah, and I asked Bianca afterwards, and she was like, yeah, like, a pundit would, like, never actually act
speaking
like
that way, yeah.
Like, or, like, go to that extreme. Like, it was a bit weird. I mean, I wouldn't say don't watch it because, obviously, I wanted to support someone, actually, and also, like, it's an easy watch. But I just kind of felt by the end of it, there were just multiple things that I was just kind of like, I just was a bit underwhelmed, to be honest.
I think, you know what it is as well? It's like, it, on the one hand, like you're saying, it's great because it's like we have a dark skin, not just a South Asian woman, but a dark skin South Asian woman. Because typically, even when South Asian women have been kind of like in the media or managed to break out of certain, you know, roles, have certain breakout roles, they tend to be very light skin, you know? So this is like, you know, she's a dark skin woman and that's like amazing. But then it's kind of like it feeds into this idea of like South Asian men being like desexualized and undesirable, which is like a thing that happens a lot in Western media. Like they're always, you know, like the smelly Indian stereotype. That's kind of the nerdy, dorky, loser Indian. You know, like that's kind of like how they present South Asians a lot of the time. So it's kind of like on the one hand, it's a win for like dark skinned South Asian women. But then also like as a whole, it's not like it's still reinforcing certain stereotypes about South Asian men. And that's not great.
Because it's like not to give like spoilers or anything, but of like the alternative love interests, one of them was this like more nerdy.
Yes, more I think nerdy, that's what I saw in the trailer.
Yeah, more nerdy Indian guy. The other one was more of like a like really rich nepo baby kind of mummy's boy, like man child kind of thing. And then
there's no positive representation of a South Asian guy, basically.
That's true, actually. And like the other love interest was just white, and they were just kind of taking the mickey out of like
you have to go through an arranged marriage. Oh, how barbaric.
Yeah, well, more like they were taking the mick out of him with his character, like the idea of like cultural appropriation and just like him being like that. So this morning there were points, and there were like quite progressive things as well, in the sense that they did have the, there was one point where the mum at the end was like, you know what, like, I don't need for you to get married. Take like your wedding jewellery and invest it in something that you want to do, if that's what you want to do. And there was also something to do with the parents, because it was kind of like a running storyline that her parents had been divorced for 15 years. But when they're at this wedding, as they did with all of these other events, like where people are going to look online and see them, they pretend to be together so they can send photos and stuff. And there's a point at the end where they're like, no, let's stop doing that, like, let's just be real, like, you, like, let's not pretend this anymore. So there were points like that where it's like, okay, like, fair enough, like, that is actually quite like progressive that they're pointing out that like we shouldn't care so much about what the community think and everything. But like overall, like you say, it was just the fact that by the end of it I was just like, is that it kind of thing.
Could have done a lot more with it, basically. Yeah.
But having said that as well, I do feel bad for Simone, because I feel like also there's just so much pressure put on her because she's such like a trailblazer.
Exactly.
Especially since Bridgerton. Mm-hmm. There's so much pressure on her to just deliver like amazing stuff again and again and again. So hopefully, I mean, to be fair, like I've seen on Twitter that there have been a number of people that are just like, oh my gosh, this movie is amazing. I'm just like, what are you
talking
about?
Well, I
love that
for her then.
Yeah. So I'm like happy that at least not everyone's like hating on him like I am, but like at the same time hopefully this isn't like a downhill thing for
her. Like casting directors, you know what, don't be afraid, put a brown on brown, you know, romantic relationship on your screen, just do it.
Agreed. Right, let me go set the camera.
Oh, I'm getting cramped.
What's he going to do?
Something about the camera. Hit record on the camera again. I'm getting cramps. Oh my god.
Oh my god, same.
I think I'm coming on, which means my fast will be broken. Hmm. Interesting.
Well, obviously, I'm aware of the fact that I have just kind of been.
Oh my god, girls!
I know. I'm aware of the fact that I have kind of just been talking down on a woman, but also happy International Women's Day.
Oh my god, is it?
Yep, today.
Wow. You haven't asked us to be your women for International Women's Day.
Apologies.
What the hell?
Sorry.
Is that what people do? Be my women?
She's obviously
be a woman.
Joking. And
no, I know.
Come on,
I know.
Ask us.
No, that's reserved for me and Curly, I'm afraid.
Oh, fine.
Yeah.
Oh, misogynist.
That's so funny. She had to think of the word. She went, oh,
Well, it's sad that obviously in the same week that it's International Women's Day.
Oh, are you going to bring up what I think you're going to bring up?
The mosque in
Oslo. Yes. Oh, my God.
Right. Let's give some context to this. So, Oxford's oldest mosque has come under fire after allegedly refusing to serve iftar meals to a group of women and their children during Ramadan. A representative reportedly told the group waiting at the mosque on Tuesday that there's no iftars for ladies and sent them away with only dates and water. The mosque had previously announced in a social media post on Monday that iftar at the masjid is for males only. It appeared to justify its position by quoting a hadith encouraging women to pray at home. Its management team has since partially rowed back, claiming it did not have enough staff to run a women's iftar, but would do so if it could recruit more volunteers, and dismissing the allegation that women were turned away as completely false rumours.
That is, oh my God. Oh, again, gosh, please don't break my fast. Please, but this, honestly, I'm seething. When I read this, I was seething because it's like, firstly, they can't say that these are false rumours because there have been like more than one instance of people reporting that this has happened to them. The first instance that I saw was of a young woman who is an F1 doctor who went to the masjid after a whole day of like working in the hospital to open her fast, got there and was basically turned away. And it obviously follows the fact that they have literally put out a statement saying that it's for male only. Yes, that in Islam, women are not obligated to go to the masjid. There's a difference between you're not allowed to go to the masjid versus you're not obligated to go, because it's not incumbent upon us. That means, like I said, we don't have an obligation because to make it easier on the women, right? That's like God's mercy. However, women have the right, and actually like, So many women do go to the masjid. They do the Tarawih prayers in you know, during Ramadan. They do, like, they are posted in the mosque during Ramadan. So to kind of use that hadith to try and actually justify not accommodating to a, you know, half of the ummah is insane. It's insane. It's manipulative. There is no justification for that. Like, unless, like, God has actually said to us, like, that women are not allowed, that's the only justification for not serving that, because then you're enabling haram. But that's not the case. Like, women are allowed. Just because it's not obligated does not mean they're not allowed, right? And it's entirely the woman's prerogative. And as a masjid, it is your duty, it's your like responsibility to cater for that. The whole point of a masjid is not just to go and pray and read Quran. It's to be welcoming. It's to welcome people, right? It's to host people. It's to let people in, even if they're not a Muslim. You know, that is what it is to be a masjid, which is. Like, so to have the fact that they, like, first thought it was okay to put that statement out is insane. Secondly, to try and justify that stance using hadith is even more insane. But actually, what's deeper than that is that this is not a universal experience for all Muslim women. It's actually, a lot of it is dictated by culture, because obviously this kind of post and this issue went viral on like Muslim Twitter, and a lot of Muslims were talking about their experiences. And what was coming up time and time and time again is that it is actually South Asian masjids that kind of tend to do this thing where they like don't tend to the women part of the masjid or the women's experience within the masjid. Because, so the way it works is that obviously a mosque is for everyone, right? But people in certain communities tend to have their own mosque. So like you might have like, the people refer to it as like the Bengali mosque, where the Bengali community might go to the Nigerian mosque, the Somali mosque, the Arab mosque. Like that's just, it's just, I don't know, cultural enclaves, that's just how it is. And people have said that they've gone to so many of the masjids, like the Somali masjid, women have never been turned away. Women are well accommodated for. A lot of people have given anecdotes about going to Arabic masjids where, you know, either the women's side was kind of like under renovation, and then the imam like literally sent the men out and accommodated for the women instead. Like there's so many examples of women being accommodated for. And it seems as though like the majority of instances where women are not accommodated for is in the South Asian masjids, in the Bengali mosques, in the Pakistani mosques. And I think that speaks a lot to the misogyny and the patriarchy that is embedded in like South Asian culture, because it's not Islamic. It's not, and nothing about this is Islamic. And the proof is in the fact that not every, you know, Muslim community behaves in this way. In fact, there are plenty of Muslim communities that behave differently and go out of their way to accommodate women. But in South Asian culture, like, as I said, the misogyny and the patriarchy is so deep that they don't believe that women belong in the outside world, and therefore there's no space for women in the masjids. Like, they don't accommodate. And it goes, and it's not just about the mosque. It kind of, even, you know, in the time of Ramadan, like, there is a huge problem in our community where, you know, women will be fasting all day. Women will make the iftar meals, which is the meal that we break our fast with in the evening. They will cook an entire banquet. The men will do nothing to help out. And then the men will be expected to eat first, and then the women like eat their leftovers. That's a very, very common thing in South Asian culture, and it's not Islamic. It's a cultural problem. It's a cultural issue that Islam is the remedy to. Islam remedies that by saying that this is the right that all Muslims should have. You know, like that's the whole point of Islam. And like you're using your twisted cultural values to like, you know, deface Islam in a way. I just think it's like, it's abhorrent. In the month of Ramadan as well, you're turning people away. You really should be ashamed of yourself. Like, I don't know. There must be some kind of regulatory body for masjids in the UK. Like,
I think they have. I'm not sure what the name of it is, but I'm pretty sure they are intervening in this.
And yeah, like, they need. Involved. Well, it just goes to show. It's not Islamic.
Mm. Oh, it's, I will so say annoying. As well, like, two things. Like, also communicating that it was a males-only service through Instagram, I think, is tough, because people don't get their information on like religious services through social media like that. You kind of find out through word of mouth sort of thing, or just how things have ran in the past. I feel like especially reaching a certain demographic of maybe older people, also especially older South Asian people, a lot of them aren't going to have Instagram and follow the mosque on Instagram and know to go to there to know that it was a males only thing. Then in part of their statement that they put out, kind of reflecting the onus back onto the fact that they don't have enough volunteers.
I was just about to say this, exactly.
Like, kind of just saying, like, it's not us, there's not enough people in the community that want to volunteer and allow us to do this for women.
It's ridiculous, because it's like, if that really is your excuse, truthfully, if you do not have enough resources, why have you settled on the solution that, okay, let's just exclude women altogether? Split your resources then. Split your resources. If you can only accommodate for 50 iftars in one evening, don't just do all 50 for men. Like, keep a percent. It doesn't even have to be 50-50. If the numbers are that men, there's more men in the masjid, at least do a smaller percentage and give that to women. Like, there's so many other solutions, but the one that you resort to is let's just exclude women altogether.
I think also there should have been some kind of discussion about this. The fact that this happened, what was it, a couple of days into Ramadan actually being there. Like, you would have thought, like, they would have, if they were going to do this, they should have like announced it just so that everyone knows this is what we're going to do. Not to condone it, but just to say if they were going to do this, they should have owned it with their chest and said, just so you know, this is it. So if you want to break your fast, you need to go elsewhere. Mm. Instead of people literally turning up expecting to be able to do it and just being turned away.
That's like me. I just don't think Instagram is the right way to communicate this either.
Yeah. I can't even let my mind go to that point, because for me, it's like that should never be a solution. Like, I know what a masjid is. Like, I've been a Muslim my whole life. Like, everyone who's a Muslim, they know what a masjid is. And there's no way you can mentally, like, logically, logistically do the acrobatics to get to a place where women aren't accommodated for. That just should never be a thing.
Yeah. Well, hopefully this regulatory body actually does intervene and manages to set things right.
Yeah, they need some kind of like repercussion, because that is, it's not right. Yeah.
it's the fact as well that when all this has happened, it hasn't been like you. I was kind of have expected them to have been like, oh, sorry, like we are doing this
time. Take accountability.
Trying to save face, but instead they're standing by it and actually like, no.
Like, but this is it. Like Islam, I'm going to, and this is me speaking as a Muslim woman, but there is such an issue within the Muslim communities, not with Islam, but with the Muslim communities of like misogyny. So many of like these, you know, dawa men, you know, the men that go on like YouTube and TikTok and give dawa, you know, which is, dawa is supposed to be invitation to Islam. So the men that kind of preach and whatever, actually so much of their like brand and their message is rooted in like misogyny, and it's wrong. It's just wrong, you know? So the difficult thing is that everyone else is looking at this like what you're doing is un-Islamic, but these men have really convinced themselves that this is the right version of Islam. And that's what's so difficult.
Yeah. Well, staying on the topic of misogyny during International Women's Day, and also I think this is fun. Yeah, I know, yay. I think this next story is also an example of how like of intersectionality and how like misogyny is directly related to racism. All these negative things of hate are kind of interlinked. It's the story that you sent, Halima, on the chat actually, of in Leicester last September, how a elderly man an elderly man was killed allegedly by two teenagers. Now, before we go into this, I have to say that this is an ongoing court case. People haven't been charged yet. Obviously, his mind is involved. So I'm not necessarily going to comment too much on actually, like, guiltiness or, like, whatever's happened. We can only go off what's been reported in the media, mm-hmm. right? But I think it's more to make this point that I mentioned at the beginning. So to give the facts, a boy is on trial charged with killing Bim Coley at Franklin Park in Leicester in September last year. His co-defendant, a 13-year-old girl, is also on trial accused of manslaughter. The court heard that a paramedic who attended the scene said that Mr. Coley told them that he was kicked and that the kids were calling him a racial slur. After the boy on trial, after he was charged with murder, the boy wrote a letter to Professional about how he'd been dumped by his girlfriend and needed anger, etc., releasing. So there's that example, and I think it just goes to show of how, like, this all started through misogyny, right? Of it being dumped by a girlfriend and being like, oh, I'm so angry, I need to, like, release it.
There's a lot here.
How does he turn into it? He turns to, like, allegedly commit a racial attack.
It's crazy.
I have something else similar to this as well, another story.
Well,
that's also in the news.
Yeah.
So recently?
So this is...
The Hertfordshire.
Exactly. So literally also this week... And it's interesting that both of these things are in the news this week during International Women's Day, all of it. So obviously, like someone's just said, there was a story in Hertfordshire. It was a BBC rating commentator. His wife and two girls were murdered.
Oh, my God.
In their house.
By the ex of one of the girls.
I have seen this.
With the crossbow he used.
Yeah,
that he, as of Thursday, has been found guilty of the rape of his ex-girlfriend and the murder of her mother and her sister.
Oh, my God.
But the thing that's come out also that's interesting is that less than 24 hours before he committed the triple murder would leave his ex-girlfriend, her sister and mother dead, he searched the internet for misogynistic podcasts, including Andrew Tate. He was so angry that she had ended their 18-month relationship that he began plotting an attack on the family by researching and buying weapons whilst watching pornography, including a video of a prison officer having sex with an inmate.
That is so much to unpack here. Like, firstly, you know when people say... Well, you know what, actually, firstly, going back to the issue of like the topic of like the elderly Indian man, that one is tooted because it starts from an issue of misogyny, right? It's this idea that this young boy is entitled to the love and the partnership of a woman. And when he's denied that, anger and violence is apparently a reasonable kind of resort, right? It's a reasonable coping mechanism. You know, he has obviously been socialized in such a way that that is what he believes, right? That he gets to be angry, that he gets to let out his anger for having been denied something that he believes that he is owed, which he's not. But also what's like more harrowing than that is like the kind of anti-South Asian racism that underpins an attack such as this, because it was quite violent. And from what I read is that they recorded it as well. Like they were literally beating... I don't know, like, how, like, I think it's just one of the most depraved things is like beating an elderly, very, very defenseless, like, vulnerable person that you can literally see they are no match for you. Their defenses, they can't do anything to help themselves. Yeah. And you are just going in and in and in on them. And on top of that, like, you're clearly some of your motivations are racist, you know? And it
given
kind of just.
That the racial slur allegedly was said, obviously, yeah. Putting two and two together, yeah.
Yeah, you know? And it's like, it just kind of shows the reality of like anti-brown racism in this country. And that it's not just rhetoric, it's not just people making racist jokes or, you know, politics being racist. It's like really, really does culminate in these kinds of like really violent, fatal attacks. Which again, it's just, it's not spoken about. I did not even know that was in the news until I saw it on like TikTok of all places. Mm. But also about this issue in like this story in like Hertfordshire. It's crazy because it's like, again, this idea that this guy was entitled to this girl and like he gets to punish her. Like he feels as though he's owed a relationship from her. And if he's denied that, he gets to be the person to punish, which is insane.
Like, he's obviously like getting a kick out of some kind of like power imbalance, like abuse of power sort of relationship based on the pornography he was watching. But I think as well, like the fact that Andrew Tate is the front man of this sort of kind of content online. But this sort of content being the content consumed by people that abuse and kill women,
right.
I feel like before would have occupied a teeny tiny little corner of the internet where people have been like, what a little freak, like no one give him attention, like Andrew Tate and stuff like that. And like people that ever try to say something like, no, hear me out on this, but like he was right about X, was there, people would be like, let's just shut up. Like we're not listening to you. We're not listening to anything that these kind of people spill out. But I don't understand how we've got to a point where he actually has like traction in conversations that people can sit there and be like, no, but he said this and this makes sense. And like young boys are now consuming this like without any kind of like parental supervision or anything like that. What does that mean for the future of like relationships going forward? How safe women can feel in relationships, how safe women can feel on the street, out and about. And what does it mean for like how we are even like perceived by men? Because you see like young boys in like comments and stuff and they're saying the most like insane horrendous things either on what women's bodies look or how women should be treated or how what should they should wear, or there's so much victim blaming still when you do see things like this come up. And it just, I literally, all I can say is that it's just truly still so scary.
And it's a pipeline as well, isn't it? It's not just like people wake up one day and they decide to just go on murder an entire family of women. Like, it's a pipeline from kind of being exposed to this kind of red pill content to really then internalizing these kind of beliefs. It starts with like kind of smaller, not that abuse could ever be small, but, you know, relatively smaller instances of abuse until they get to a point where they are so radicalized that they really genuinely believe that it's right for them to enact that level of like violence. And it's crazy because it's, you know, women are always told, you know, like there've been so many instances where women have thankfully made it out of an abusive relationship, right? And a lot of men and some women as well, you know, will detract from their, you know, from their abuse by saying, well, it's obviously not true, or it obviously wasn't that bad because you wouldn't have stayed for long. Or, you know, why didn't you leave soon? If it was that bad, why didn't you just leave? And this is a real life example of like why it's not so easy to just leave, because then you are at risk of being killed. And this is not just one example. We have seen this time and time and time again. Like, you can't just get up and go, you know?
I think that's why it's also so important that you do believe victims as well, because there's also so many instances of people that do like get the courage to actually leave, right. But then they're not given adequate support or protection by the powers that be, and then end up unfortunately losing their lives like after or whilst they're leaving.
Is that people don't want to?
Sorry.
No, I was just going to say, people don't want to believe women until they're dead, until they've paid the ultimate price.
Literally.
You know, like, you need to see death in the face for you to believe that something was bad, like it was an abusive situation.
I was going to say, can I also say, like, firsthand as well, I have seen the impact of this, particularly in South Asian households as well, where women have been at the hands of abusive men and haven't left because enduring that abuse is better than being a divorced woman.
Yeah. Or like being not believed, being ridiculed, being mocked.
Well, they're not believed and they are ridiculed. Yeah. But they don't take that final step to actually finalize and leave because they would rather go through that than the stigma associated with being a divorced woman.
Right, exactly. Like, we're not hospitable to women, like, survivors of abuse. Like, we don't make it, like, they're stuck between a rock and a hard place, you know. Like, for them, it's such a difficult decision, because if you're in a situation where you're being abused, your only consideration is that I need to leave. You shouldn't then have to think, like, how are people going to treat me? How is society going to see me? What kind of life am I going to have afterwards? Like, you shouldn't have to think about that. You should just think about, I need to save myself.
I have literally seen women leave the most sadistic, horrific men in like marriages, right, and finally get divorced, and genuinely heard people say, why didn't she just try a little bit harder in the marriage? Why didn't she just do this? Why didn't she just do that? You know, divorce should have been like the final step, or divorce, they should have just waited, and maybe they could have tried counseling or talked to some people about it first, or, you know, they shouldn't have done that. And, you know, maybe for the kids, they should have stuck together. My blood boils. And it's always like the older generation that say older generation that say that, but it absolutely boils my blood, because it's like, you don't realize how much abuse that woman has suffered and endured over the years, or whatever, however long it may have been.
It's
and
crazy
how courageous you have to be to take that step in the face of exactly what they're perpetrating.
It's crazy, because it's like, if they do leave, then it's, oh, why didn't they stay, they should have tried harder. And then when they stay and they're killed, oh, she should have left. She should have just left. She should have just gone. Like, you're not giving these women, like, a hospitable environment. Win. Like, you can't win.
When really, you should be keeping them out of your mouth, unless it's to actually speak
offer
about how
support.
Sad it is. Because also, like, why are you finding nowhere to actually speak about the men that have actually done this horrific thing? Why is the focus not immediately
on? It's just how rampant abuse is in the world in general, but particularly in South Asian families. Like, it was, especially for the older old generation, how normalized it was and how expected it was. That's why half of them aren't, well, most of them aren't divorced, and they did stick with their marriages for 50, 60 years. But they suffered so much in those years that it's unspeakable.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting, actually, because I saw a picture, like, recently of, like, I think actually it might have been a African couple, and it was like when they were younger and when they were older, and someone, it was like, oh, like, give me love like this, and someone quote tweeted it going, I actually want to hear Auntie's story first before I agree to that. Because it is like,
and I think this is the direct product of when you don't educate girls from young, you don't allow them to fulfill their own life aspirations. That you don't allow them to study, you don't allow them to, like, pursue further education. You get them married really early, they have children of their own really early, and they're just thrust into motherhood and being a wife and domestication really, really, like, in their teens for a lot of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, my own grandmother was married in her when she was like 17 or something. It was ridiculous. Like, that, this is the direct outcome, and then that trickles down the generations, where this whole thing is so normalized of, you must withstand whatever your husband puts you through because it's what we did, and that's what we expect you to do because it's so normal for us. Whereas our generation, we know kind of a bit better in that sense, and we look at them like, no, we're not putting up with this because we deserve better.
I think what I will say is that, obviously, whilst this kind of abuse has specific iterations through every culture and every community, it is also pretty universal. You know, it's the reality of like this abuse is like it's a crisis of masculinity, and that is a universal thing that exists across all communities and all, you know, and that's why obviously we speak about the problems in our community because that's our responsibility, that's our duty, that's our right to do so. But oftentimes in the West, they do, you know, on the flip side of things, they do try to demonize certain cultures where they're like, oh, it's the, you know, the Asians or the Muslims in particular, we get it a lot where it's like, oh, you know, these people are barbarian and these men are beasts and they beat their wives and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, well, every year, like we're seeing, you know, dozens of cases of white women being murdered by white men. And it's like, where's the vim for that? Ultimately, this is a crisis of masculinity that transcends all cultural borders.
And I think, like, exactly, that's what it is. It's a crisis of masculinity, and you see that everywhere. And I think it's on such a rise that, like, that this exact kind of content online is targeting young men and young boys who might have, well, they kind of create these insecurities, like, you haven't got your money up, you're not this, you're not that, get in the gym, go get a side hustle, go get 12 side hustles, and then go and abuse the hell out of women is basically like the premise of the whole thing. Yeah. And it's so easy to fester and get caught up in that. I can imagine for like these young boys, if you feel like you've not got hope elsewhere.
Yeah.
And that's exactly who is being preyed on and who's being targeted here.
Yeah.
I'm glad actually that you raised this whole universal issue, because that was one final thing on this topic that I wanted to just briefly discuss. It's that also this week I've seen a clip going viral. It's in a club. And I don't know where it is. I think it's somewhere in the West, maybe the UK. And it's basically of a South Asian man sexually harassing a woman in the club. Obviously what's going on isn't okay. Mm. Like, it's not. But then the comments and the quote tweets of everything are all like, oh, you can't do that in this country, mate. Like, he might have been able to do that, but you can't do it here. Mm. And I was literally like, have you been to a club? Like, this is an issue, but it's not exclusive to any race or culture. Like, what we're seeing here actually is like,
we have this conversation all the time. We had it very recently about the grooming gangs as well, because it's like, it's true that Asian men do it the same way that white men do it, Arab men do it, black men do it, Hispanic men do it. Literally, it is the one thing that transcends all cultural borders is like, you know, sexual abuse.
And also, what do those comments mean? That if the victim was also the same race as the perpetrator, then it would be okay?
Exactly.
Yeah. I don't think so.
Exactly.
But yeah, like, you cannot actually say that it doesn't happen in nightclubs here between white men as
there
well.
There are literal, like, anti-spike campaigns, anti-harassment campaigns.
Why is
like,
it on the inside of a toilet of every bathroom I go to, in a restaurant, pub, club, anything? Ask for Angela everywhere.
Exactly.
Why does Ask for Angela exist in the first place if it wasn't such a rampant issue?
Yeah. It's deflection, ultimately, is what it is. But whatever, we know better.
All right. I think that's enough misogyny for one day. You'll be happy to hear. But I think there is something else that we should discuss, and it is what happened at the Oscars. So,
what did happen?
In particular, the winning of Best Documentary.
Oh, right, okay.
So, the film, I'm pretty sure people will have seen that, the film No Other Land, which is about activists fighting Israeli demolitions of Palestinian homes in the occupied West Bank, won the 2025 Academy Award for Best Documentary. The film also highlights the friendship between Palestinian and Israeli filmmakers. And obviously this won Best Documentary, and in the director's acceptance speech... the directors correctly called out the US, saying that their foreign policy is blocking the path to peace. However, I think there's multiple layers to this. First of all, in the fact that it took a Palestinian-Israeli film,
right,
because that's ultimately what this is, given the directors, it took a Palestinian-Israeli film to actually win Best Documentary. Mm. This whole narrative as well about, like, oh, this friendship that's formed and, like, almost, like, putting them on equal ground almost, when we know that's very much not the case. Mm. And also in regards to the speech, the acceptance speech that they gave, the Israeli film director, Yuval Abraham, It was particularly the quote that you said where he's like, can't you see that we are intertwined? That my people can be truly safe if Basil's people are truly free and safe. There is another way. It's not too late for life, the living. There is no other way. And to me, that kind of just was like, yeah, but that implies that it's like, that they are equal.
There's an equal struggle here, and that's just, it's not the case. And actually, so what this is called, the process of this, is called normalization. And it's basically the kind of like neutralizing of a kind of really extreme political issue to kind of make it a little bit more palatable in a way where people can consume it and show sympathy and solidarity without taking that sympathy and solidarity to the full extent of what it really should be in order to facilitate Palestinian liberation. You know, it's this a lot more like thoughts and prayers kind of activism, you know? I'll start by saying that my first and foremost, like, it's not to take away from like the Palestinian story that the documentary does nevertheless, like, you know, show. And, you know, if this means something to Palestinian people, then cool. However, from what I understand and the kind of feedback that I've seen is that the majority of Palestinian people don't necessarily agree with this kind of activism, because as Carlos has said, it's not a Palestinian film about Palestinian struggle. It's about the struggle to coexist. But that is, if we know anything, a year and a half in, is a myth. There is no struggle to coexist. These communities are not equally suffering. This is a genocide, which is another thing, because I believe they used the term ethnic cleansing. They didn't go as far as calling it a genocide on the Oscars stage. And it really just kind of goes to show, like, they give enough to kind of say that they've done something, but not really what needs to be said, not really what needs to be done, not really what needs to be shown, you know?
I think, like, kind of what we're seeing is like how much people love to almost like fetishize and romanticize the kind of oppressor and oppressed relationship, that you can get to the Oscars and you can stand like kind of hand in hand almost symbolically and saying like, we're standing here together to show how the two cultures can coexist, to show how two different sets of people can coexist. And if my people are free, then their people are free ones. Well, we're all free. And using that kind of language amongst a scene of ethnic cleansing and genocide, whether you're going to say the word or not, is so like the opposite of the point, sort of. And it is that kind of like, you have that ceiling of like thoughts and prayers, but then nothing else goes above that to kind of delve into why this has been going on, or the actual brutality of the situation, how one-sided it's all been. And like you said, the fact that the Israeli people are not suffering the same as the Palestinians.
I think this, it's like we're so kind of past this point of like coexistence, because it's like, that would be amazing. It would have been amazing, you know, if in 1948, the Western powers said, you know what, we're gonna move this population of, you know, Jewish people into Palestine, and they're gonna coexist in Palestine with the Palestinian people. That would have been amazing. That was never, ever, ever the intention of the Israeli state. That was never, ever the intention of the Zionist mission. You know, so to kind of come here, especially now in the midst of a year and a half long genocide, and to kind of purport this message of like coexistence, when that was never the idea. Like I said, that was never the founding principle of the Israeli state, is insulting, you know? Like, we're so past that point, and what it does is it erases the material conditions of genocide that the Palestinian people have been facing at the hands of the Israeli state. It's very nice that there are, you know, demographics of people who are, you know, want peace, but the only way to have peace is to give reparations to the Palestinians, you know, and part of that is to give their land back.
Yeah, so I think it was just kind of, again, you don't want to take away from the Palestinian story that this documentary does tell, but to me it was kind of just a bit irritating to see how so many people are just blindly sharing this moment as like, oh, this is a overly positive thing, and like, hooray, like, finally someone stood up. But it's like, again, it's not, it kind of falls short in a way.
And I think like because people see a documentary made on this issue making it to an Oscar, not even just a nomination, winning an Oscar, I think people literally think like, well, that's that done then. We don't need to care about it anymore. Obviously, everybody's made peace because these two people have made peace enough to make a documentary that's won an Oscar about it. Mm-hmm. Everyone's talking about it on an Oscar stage. Therefore, there is no issue to even worry about anymore. And that's what I think people are taking, using as their bit of performative activism and being mm-hmm. done with it, kind of like the Blackout Tuesday squares that people put, or the All Eyes on Rafa graphic that everyone put on their story. Like, everybody loves a bit of activism when it's palatable and when it's easy to just reshare a little post. To an extent.
Yeah,
everyone loves it when all you have to do is click reshare to your story.
Exactly. Like, people weren't really engaging with the content of what was being shared, what was being shown, and more importantly, what the Palestinian people's reception is. They like the optics of a Palestinian man standing on the Oscar stage, and it's like they kind of cut the screen off here, not realizing that there's an Israeli man also on the stage with him, also talking, you know, also kind of like neutralizing the kind of Israeli harm in all of this in a way, you know. And it's like, it's not like, why is the Oscars like the benchmark for what is like good progress to make on this issue?
And I literally can attest to what you just said, like, in my own, like, I've seen it firsthand from like primarily English people that I've met, and I don't want to generalize here, but I've seen enough people that I've met at places like university or whatever, you know, you just have like random people on Instagram and stuff, and they'll literally post stuff about a refugee crisis, about Israel Palestine, about so many different issues that affect people of color, and then they'll be like, activism slay. And or like literally this one time I was on someone's close friend's story, and then they post something about refugees and the migrant crisis and obviously in support and like in support of refugees and stuff, and then the next post was a close friend's post of loads of replies from other white people being like, slay, oh my god, look at you, prime minister, like, go off.
Oh my god, and I would peel my skin off. Oh my god, it's so cringe. It's so painful. Cringe.
It's genuinely
like
painful.
The bar is so low for these people to feel like a good human being. It's so low.
And let me
tell
you, none of those people who replied posted anything of themselves that you probably even know anything
about.
Well,
that's
why
for them it's
so
impressive. Like, that's really the height of activism for them.
Don't get me wrong, I have plenty of white and English people on my Instagram who do care, who do,
yeah, of course,
do not performatively do activism. Like, they really do care. They study up and they are trying so hard to like act in what's right. Do exist, don't worry, and we see you, but my god, the other ones are loud.
Yeah, oh my god.
So can you believe it'll be
I've been waiting to get that story off my chest for a long time. That was like 2 years ago that happened.
Can you believe it'll be nearly 5 years since blackout
Blackout Tuesday. Yeah. Oh god, it is crazy.
I mean, on that note as well, I've all the TikTok sounds that, like, there's one going around at the moment that's like Boris Johnson announcing lockdown. It's crazy because in a couple of weeks it will have been 5 years, which is, it's weird because obviously for me, thankfully, in my privileged position, it's kind of almost like a nostalgic thing.
You were studying your law thing.
Yeah, but it's like a privileged thing of like, oh, like being stuck in my auntie's house with her family and really sunny and like that, when other people's stories are literally like, my partner died.
And I couldn't see that.
My granddad died. I don't want to hear it.
Yeah. Aww. Exactly. So
that's what I hate. Sorry, Carlos, but I hate that, like, it was sunny and the weather was so nice and we sat outside and no one had to work and it was work from home and furlough and blah, blah, blah. I was like, my granddad died and so did my mum nearly. Like, I don't want to hear it.
Well, your mum as well?
Yeah, same week as my granddad. She was in hospital.
She had
COVID. It was
really
bad. Yeah.
Damn. Yeah. It just goes to show, like, people's... like, such diverging experiences of, like,
the
same thing.
But at the end of the day, it was a pandemic when people were dying. I don't understand how anyone can literally sit there and be like, I loved it. Take me back to 2020.
No, I think what it is, it's not that people were pleased about a pandemic. I think because it exposed a lot of flaws in society. And I think for the first time in a long time, people had respite from that.
The world stopped.
The world
stopped. I do hear that.
And I think that's what it is.
I felt that too. I felt that as well, don't get me wrong, but I think as well, like, people really glossed over the fact that if you weren't directly affected by it, it was very easy to romanticize 2020 and be like, I loved how slow everything was and the Korean coffee and the yoga workouts and stuff, like, Don't worry, I made a Korean coffee too.
It's you know what it is. It's like it's a coping mechanism. People have to adapt, otherwise they snap and they break. And like I said, I think a lot of that is like a reflection of how the government handled it. You know, the government were very blasé about things. The government were very like, they weren't putting in the precautions. They weren't looking after their population of people. Boris Johnson literally came out and said, we're ready to sacrifice. We are ready to sacrifice, like as a strategy to sacrifice demographics of people to this, you know, plague. And I think that, I mean, our own government were out here having parties and et cetera and et cetera. I think that reflects.
And I wonder why no one wants to go to war.
Well, yeah, exactly. I think that reflects a lot, though, in the attitudes of people. But then, on the other hand as well, I get why it's like so harrowing for so many people. But then for other people, it was like the first time there was any kind of respite from like this uber capitalistic system. People were stopping in their tracks for once in their life, you know. The first time in their lives.
Yeah, I don't think there's necessarily anything wrong with feeling a sense of positive nostalgia if it was a positive time for you. For me, it's like maybe people who do feel that way, be tactful and think about sharing that.
Because I've had so many people just be all up in my face about how amazing it was, and I'm like too polite to say anything. I'm just like, it's nice.
Like, no one can deny the way that you feel, but if you're a good human being, you'll think about the fact that literally the world was ultimately in crisis and loads of people died, so maybe it's not something to go and blast out about. It's just such a
global watershed, isn't it? Like, it just meant so many different things for so many different people. It changed like the fabric of society as a whole. And I think it really, I mean, we could talk about this when we get to the anniversary of it, because there's a lot to reflect on. There really is a lot to reflect on.
5 years is just mad as well.
Yeah. Mad. Wow. And it's also like, you know, the picture of like the guy that's standing in front of a hurricane and he's like looking at it and he's like, oh, that's coming. It's kind of like also that, but with our 5 year anniversary as well. It's like, that's coming soon.
Yeah. Oh my God.
So yeah, time flies. Another thing I wanted to discuss. Have you seen what Mr. Pointless has been chatting? Alexander Armstrong, you know, the guy who does Pointless, not the guy. Never watch Pointless.
Mm-mm.
You watch Pointless, Simran.
Right. It's a you thing. Uncultured. That's a half white on. That's a half white in you. This doesn't belong in a South Asian.
Well, actually, I first watched it with my youngest family. But
diversity.
You're right. But also, you never heard of Pointless? Like,
I think I have heard of it.
No,
is it a board game as well?
Yeah, it will be. And basically,
It
used to be that there were two guys that do it. There's the presenter guy, and then there was this guy who you might have seen, the guy with glasses who sits there, and he kind of gives all the facts about like what they've just announced kind of thing.
Okay.
And everyone kind of, to be honest, in my opinion, everyone kind of prefers the guy with the glasses who left. But the presenter kind of just stands there and doesn't really do very much, so it's kind of just a bit what's going on. But yeah, the presenter, he's called Alexander Armstrong, and he has come out this week completely unprovoked. I don't understand what's going on, but he's come out and done an article for The Telegraph, and he's basically said, following Keir Starmer's decision to apply VAT to private school fees, he said, I'm feeling really, really angry about that and extremely poor. In our case, private school is the only place available for our children to learn music.
I just zoned out. Sorry, can you just repeat what you said?
So he said, about the VAT, Keir Starmer applying VAT to private school fees.
Oh, right.
He said, I'm feeling really, really angry about that and extremely poor. In our case, private school is the only place available for our children to learn music. Bearing in mind.
To learn what?
To learn music. What?
Bearing in mind also that he is estimated to have a net worth in the millions and descends from a land owning family boasting barons, industrialists, and aristocrats in his lineage and among his family's connections.
My brother, what it's about giving private piano teacher? I don't know.
It's giving the UK farmer protests. That's what it's giving. It's giving wealth hoarding. It's giving
how
greed.
How can you say that you're feeling poor? Rich man pays tax.
In this economy as well. Like, you literally present like one of the most popular game shows in the UK. Like, how can you be going on about
like people are going to believe you? Yeah. We believe you. You're so poor. Oh, sorry. Thoughts
so
and prayers.
So poor and so relatable. Yeah. God king.
No. It's crazy. But also, it's like,
do they not teach music in state schools?
Exactly. You've got that much money. Just go and, like, if you're get that bothered private. About it, go and do something else.
Well,
like,
really, what it is
I'm sure your friends know someone.
Yeah. Also, sorry. I will say that I remember in, like, this isn't like to talk about my education music that I received at private school. I did really enjoy. But I remember in year 7, the state school that I was going to have gone to, they were learning how to play instruments. I wasn't doing that in private school. So if anything, they've got a good thing going on. I don't know why it's changed. But like,
loads of people in my school played instruments.
Yeah.
I mean, the point is, it's not banned. Like, it's not banned anywhere apart from private schools for you to come out music and tell
people. Music is part
people.
Of the curriculum.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, up until year 9, unless you take over GCSE. Yeah, it is. So, like, I don't know who your kid... Like, do we not go to school that you're going to tell us that it's the only place? Like, and we're just going to be sit here and be like, oh, yeah, you're right. Like, I don't know. Do you think we're stupid? Yeah. Really, what this is just a wealth hoarding exercise. That's what it is. Yeah. It's you don't want to pay higher tax because you want to hoard your wealth. And it's funny that this is about, like, private schools as well, because obviously, typically... You know, the kind of higher upper class people, they do send their children to private schools, which is it's such a mirror to all sorts of class problems. But I guess it's this idea that they thought that was like their little bubble that was safe, and now it's being encroached on by the state, and they kind of are against that, you know. Yeah,
like it's a right almost.
Exactly. I'm quite surprised that it wasn't taxed. Before,
yeah,
I didn't think about it.
Yeah, I mean, this was funny enough. Speaking about our anniversary, I think this was one of my first ever discussions on the show. Was about private and public schools. And again, I will say there should be no such thing as a private school. Like, it is inherently a barbaric concept. Mm.
So if it is going to exist, then yeah, of course it should be taxed.
Yeah,
I think it's just funny as well, because like, there are probably people out there who, based on their income, that it's like probably people that want to send their kids to private school, but realistically don't earn. They probably are at the tax threshold where, like, right.
They're like struggling to do it.
Yeah, it probably would affect some certain people. I don't believe that he is one.
He's
of those
not
people.
One of them. Like, he is not one of them.
Yeah. So. But yeah, it's just, I don't understand why you would call
it.
It is
like, this idea of, like, they probably believe that they're some kind of protected class, you know, and they're being encroached on, and that's
don't
what
want my kids going to school with no riffraff children.
Yeah,
like
that's
me.
It.
Yeah.
Riffraff.
Well, it's like, if you care so much, then maybe you do need to budget more. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, get Martin Lewis money saving expert on the job.
Yeah. What did these people say, these politicians? You can do a shop for £5 for family of four at Aldi, just buy potatoes and carrots and nothing else. Yeah. You know, like when people try to give like a own. To...
When they ask like Bill Gates, like how much is like fairy liquor, and he's like, I don't know, $50.
It's crazy.
One final thing I wanted to talk about. Have you seen the conspiracy theories about King Charles?
Mm-mm.
Still feels weird, by the way, calling him King Charles.
Hasn't he got a playlist or something now?
Oh, yeah, he is. He's doing a playlist of Apple Music of like.
He's trying to be Barack Obama.
King Charles?
Yeah.
He's doing an Apple Music playlist.
Yeah, he's doing like a thing with Apple Music, like songs that have inspired.
Imagine telling
life.
Like King Henry that or Queen Victoria that back in the day.
It'd kill a Victorian child vibes.
Truly.
But that's actually not what I wanted to speak about.
But do you think he's going to do like the Barack Obama and like put like songs that you know he's not listening to, like Charlie, like Brat.
Kendrick Lamar, Lizzo, all of that.
Like, not like us.
Yeah.
That would be hilarious.
Yeah. Eagerly looking.
Why is he doing that?
I think it's to be more
just
relatable.
Be more relatable, I guess. Obviously. He doesn't have the support like his mum did, isn't it? That's why.
Yeah, 100%. But funnily enough, that has reminded me though. Have you seen him? Trisha Paytas is pregnant again.
What, with a third child?
Yes, yeah. I'm not going to say it.
But there's obviously these like ridiculous rumors online that obviously aren't true that are saying that like basically every time that she. Is pregnant.
A royal dies,
or someone like of that kind of stature dies, and people are a bit like, maybe certain Who's people left? Should be worried. But no, it's actually not the Apple Music or Trisha Paytas I want to speak about. It's that last Friday, for the first time actually, King Charles made an Islamic call to prayer at Windsor Castle. So the royal
he made it.
or like his people, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
oh, like they facilitated it.
So the royal residence opened its doors for the first time to open iftar in the state apartments, 1,000 year history. So for the first time, this has happened. And of course, online, all I'm seeing now are these conspiracy theories about, oh, King Charles is converted to Islam. What's this going on? God. Like, he's no longer fit to be defender of the faith. What's
the
going on?
The Caliphate of London is done. It's coming, guys.
Starts with Sadiq Khan. Here we go.
Here we go.
Oh, sarcasm for Ofcom in case you were.
This is not a crusade. Ofcom, if you're listening.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, I was laughing because I just don't think King Charles and Trisha Paytas would be in the same sentence.
No.
Can you imagine?
But yeah, I mean, it would be interesting if it did happen, but I think it's highly unlikely that he has converted.
Highly unlikely.
But also, even if
the monarchy is still very much rooted in, like, Christianity.
Well, that's why people have a problem with it, isn't it? But it's like, even if he did, like, why do you have such a problem with that? Why do you care so much about what religion the royal family is? I know that that's how it used to be, but in big 2025, like...
No, it's funny because because
it's still, like, in the church and all the...
That's why it's so interesting, because obviously Britain was historically a Christian country, and, like, a lot of the cultures and even the laws and the kind of political systems we have has been dictated by Christianity. But if you actually look at the demographic of Brits today, I think they are largely non-religious. So it's kind of people who don't actually resonate with any faith, who have not been baptized, have never stepped foot in a church in their lives, are kicking and screaming and crying, the king should be Christian, it's a Christian country. When was the last time you went to church, my friend?
Mm.
When was the last time? You lot are eating pancakes, but you're not going to church. You're not paying tithe. You are not paying tithe. Exactly. What have you given up for Lent for you to be crying about Christianity? Anyways. Just another day of Islamophobia. We love to see it.
How close is Halima to breaking her fast after this episode?
God forgive me. Actually the hardest thing, right? Is the anger for me, to be honest with you. And, like, not swearing. Oh my God, like, I'm trying not to
swear. Oh, you can't swear?
No, you can't. Well, you just should. And this is what, you know what, this is what's so funny, because it's like they really, the you know, like, the West really presents, like, Muslims as, like, so barbaric. And it's like, literally, in our holiest month, I'm striving to be the best version of myself as instructed by God. Like, that's all we're doing. We're all just trying to be better people, to the point where I'm trying not to swear so as to not upset God. And what, and you think this is the same God that is instructing us to go out and kill and rape and whatever?
Sigh.
But yeah, I'm trying to be calm.
Well,
I love that for you.
To round things off, some positive news. So first of all, if people haven't listened, then they should go and listen to Steel Bangles' new EP.
Nas is on it.
It's a really cool concept. It's a really cool concept. So he's basically taken, he's obviously like an iconic British Asian producer, and he's kind of taken this to the whole world. So he's got like, it's all these collaborations. So AP Dylan's on it.
Amazing.
Stefflon Don.
Idris Elba's on it.
Idris Elba, Shay's Universe, multiple others.
I rate him, you know.
Lo J.
Have you listened to it?
Bits of it, because obviously, like, with work and stuff.
Yeah.
But the track that also I really rate is the one with Nas on it, but also it's got Tamil singer Sid Sriram on it as well. And it's like, it's really cool.
It's not this one.
I want to add it.
Which one is it?
It's in One Day It Will All Make Sense. Mm. Yeah. So, like,
Oh my God, a track with AP Dylan and Omar Lay.
I mean, I said that 2 minutes ago.
I'm so sorry. Sorry.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like every single one. That one times, that's the one that I really like. It's like really
Is it cool. giving summer?
Yeah, it can do, but it's more, it kind of sounds like very like nostalgic, kind of like old school.
Oh,
like,
no, you know what? Give it to him. Give the man his flowers. I love
Steel Bangles.
So do I. He's representing, like, I love it when artists come from like a specific like culture or community or genre. And then they have this like cross-cultural like network and collaboration. And I think Steel Bangles is one of them. AP Dylan is another one of them. And I love it. I love seeing worlds collide. I think that's kind of the really beautiful thing about music, is that it should transcend cultures and be a site of like collaboration for so many different people and communities and cultures. I love it.
Oh yeah, Simran, you'll love this as well. He's not credited like openly on it, but track number 3 of Stefflon Dunn, Fred again, help producer. So
is it?
Yeah, he's on the credits.
That's
for
so cool.
Oh, wow.
I thought you were gonna say The Weeknd for a second.
No, so did I. I was waiting to hear.
But no, the thing with Steel Bangles is I think it's because like AP Dunn's obviously great, but Steel Bangles is like very authentically British Asian.
Yeah, that's it. Cool, it's even more like, even more, yeah, for us, like, yeah, personally. Yeah,
he is really cool. I went to a talk and met him a couple of years ago, and he was talking about his whole journey and stuff, and like it's about mental health, but he's talking about his whole life and stuff, and he's actually got a really cool backstory. He's a nice guy.
Yeah,
sure. He deserves it.
So everyone go and listen to
that. Give him flowers.
Also, like, positive news coming from a negative thing. Do you remember Child Q? Ages ago.
Oh.
So for context, she was subjected to a degrading strip search by police at school after a teacher said that she smelled weed. She was 15 years old at the time and was on her period. She's made to remove her bloodied pad during the intimate search. Finally, three cops are facing a misconduct hearing. So that's something.
It's something. It's just, yeah, it's still not enough.
It's still not enough.
They should be suspended, truthfully.
No, and it's also like the fact that I saw that like in the depths of Twitter, like there's not barely been any reporting on it. Yeah. And it was such like a horrific thing.
Well, they always do that though, don't they? Like they'll have like these really, really awful cases where police have really like of police misconduct, and then they'll like bury the report afterwards, or like they'll bury the investigation afterwards.
Yeah. But I think ultimately good that this misconduct hearing is finally happening.
I hope something more comes from that, i.e. a suspension.
Yeah. Any kind of repercussions, really. But finally, I thought, Halima, I saw you tweeted about this, and wait until I do the camera, and then you can tell us the story.
What's the story? Simran, what you up to today?
Gym now, and then I'm going to go to my cousin's birthday.
Cute. Were you guys celebrating at home?
Oh, just at home, just cutting a cake.
Aww.
What about you?
What are you doing in the gym? Her cousin's birthday.
Cardio. Look at me.
Oh, you're so good. Believe I still haven't started. Oh my God.
2 weeks left, I think.
You got two weeks left?
7, 11, 13 days.
You're amazing. You are my idol. How's it gone for you?
Yeah.
Have you noticed the difference?
Yeah, I mean, weight, I feel like I'm strong again, which I'm really enjoying. Like, I remember saying it on radio, like, I used to be strong.
You wanted to get that again,
2-3 years ago, and I wanted to get strong again. So now I feel strong. And I love how feeling strong feels on the body.
I love it too.
You know what I mean?
I love it.
Yeah, I just love that. Yeah. And then now I've like bumped up the cardio. So I've got a wedding next month, and I've got outfits I'm going to slay in. But I'm like, stats wise, I'm 5 kilos down, and then obviously a lot of it is muscle. Damn. As well, so I feel like the weight loss was slower than I wanted, but I have to remind myself that it's muscle.
No, but also you didn't have a lot of weight to lose in the first place. Like, you were never gonna have.
I put so much weight Simran, on Christmas and stuff, man.
Nah, you didn't.
I did, but I wanted to feel better, and I do feel better, so that's happy that I did it. I won't lie, it has not been perfect. There has been days where, like, especially if it's like time of the month, where I'm just like feeling sorry for myself, like, listen, I'm gonna eat something bad or like whatever, or like not go to the gym. But
I mean,
at the end of the day, it's just realistic.
Most importantly, how are you getting to the gym now with your car?
I have a car. I'm driving my grandma's car, but that car would never, ever, ever in a million years make it to Manchester.
Okay. Just like local, yeah. To be.
No, but I'm like, at least that's the most important thing. You can get to the gym, continue 75 hard. That streak hasn't been broken.
Yes. And I'm getting used to that car. I kind of love it. It's like a little, it's definitely not a boy race car, but it's a little Corsa.
Maybe you should just keep that.
Well, I did go look at courses the other day because I was like, I'm enjoying the car
so
much.
Some of the new ones are
nice.
Like, amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well done, Simran. What date is it you're projected to do it on?
The 19th of March. I've got 13 days left.
Right, so in that same episode, probably, when we talk about...
Wait, that's 11 days.
Yeah, it is. It's 11 days, yeah.
8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. Oh, what's it? Oh, I haven't crossed off. 11.
Yeah. So on that
sorry,
same,
I didn't cross off.
In that same episode where we probably talk about the 5 years since COVID started, we can also celebrate Simran doing a 75 hard. So
incredible
look forward
girl.
To that. Right, thanks finally, guys. Halima, I wanted to close with this.
Yeah, what?
This tweet.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
I
want
to hear this story.
Basically, guys, so my dad is a businessman and he, like, he has his own business. He's always had his own business. And I don't know if other, like, maybe particularly Bengalis will relate to this, but I feel like, so obviously a lot of Bengali people work in, like, the restaurant industry. That is their kind of, like, main bread and butter. And we own the businesses in the restaurant industry. And I don't know if other people will be able to relate to if they have, like, family members who own restaurants as well. They do business, like, they're still in Bangladesh. Like, it's such an informal system of business. And, like, I'm not... I mean, like, it works. It works, you know what I mean? So, like, kudos to them. But my dad, some of the interactions that he has with some of his workers is so hilarious. He called one of his workers the other day and he was like, hey, you need to do this job for me. And the guy literally... And, again, these are, like, respectfully... you know, like immigrants, like a bit fresh off the boat. And the guy literally was like, no, you have to pay me first. I need financial motivation. He didn't even say motivation. He goes, I need inspiration, brother. I need inspiration. You have to pay me. Give me inspiration to do the work. And my dad was like, obviously swearing, you like scoundrel. Like, I am not giving you a single penny until you've done the work. I'll find someone else, blah, 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 blah. And the guy just kept going on and on and on. Like, give me some inspiration like that. It's so funny. It's ridiculous. But honestly, some of the ways in general, like some of the ways that my dad like speaks to his, or like even how they speak to each other, it's ridiculous. I remember there's one time where he'd go, so basically, because obviously he owns like a few restaurants, he has like a few properties or whatever, so he just always has like handymen on deck. And like one time he got one of the handymen to like do like fix the bathroom in our house, and it's near my room so I could overhear them. My dad was calling the guy a fat B word, not a female dog, the other B word, a fat, but yeah. Like, he just, that's how he talks to his staff. He'll be like, you bloody this, you bloody that, you fat this, you fat that. So he was just swearing at the guy, and the guy goes, have you seen yourself? Have you seen yourself? And that's the conversation that they're having. And my dad was like, oh, you wish you could look like me. Like, that's just how they talk to each other.
You know,
and I'm like,
what's really funny about that? You know how we got the flat done last year?
Yeah.
It was like a... someone who's like a couple years older than us and yeah. their uncle, Asian obviously, and like it was literally like that. Like my uncle was literally concerned because all they were doing was just insulting
each other. My dad will call up his staff and be like, "You bloody this, you bloody that," and like you think like, "Oh my God, these poor staff members, they're just being told off." And then you hear an interaction in person and they're giving it back.
Yeah.
They're literally like, give me money, blah, 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 blah. Like,
yeah.
Asians are funny. Asians just
gotta
are
love
so
it,
funny.
Man.
The way they do business is hilarious. Yeah. They genuinely still think they're back in Bangladesh.
No HR, no...
Nothing. Nothing.
Bit like how we do this show, isn't it, Carlos?
Yeah.
Bit
like...
On that note, let's round things off. Thank you, everyone, for listening to this International Women's Day 2025 episode of Mango Masala.
Yeah, so it felt really empowering.
Well,
if anything, it just goes to show that there's no point in having initiatives like Women's Day when women are still being murdered.
Yeah, no, literally, like, what was it, 4 years ago?
Gendered violence, like...
Was it 4 years? Yeah, 4 years ago when we were talking about Sarah Everard when that happened. So, yeah, and look, what, has anything changed?
No.
Wait, we're meant to be positive, guys. Positive end to
Carlos
the show.
Hasn't asked us to be his women, so right. What does it even matter?
It's
and he's not going to ask us to be his Patricks.
I kind of don't want to be Carlos's woman, sorry.
Do you want to be his Patrick, though?
What does that mean? Okay, okay, I get it. It's a Gen Z joke that we're not understanding. We're taking what she's saying literally.
I've got it. It's okay. St. Patrick's Day on March 17th.
Okay.
Yes, I'm Irish.
I don't get it.
You haven't asked us to be your eggs or your pancake,
okay,
actually.
Okay, right, Simran, I'm closing this.
Is this Gen Z humor, guys?
Goodbye, everyone.
Bye.